Hello and welcome to episode 53 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is August 21st, 2017. I am Rollo McFlugel, and with me is Slappy Jones too. We are both at McFlugel.com. So this episode is actually our one-year anniversary episode. So we've been doing this for a year, so thank you for all of the listeners who have been with us throughout all of this, and also our new listeners. We appreciate everyone. So the show notes page, as always, is McFlugel.com/53, our episode number. So I'm going to hand it off over to Slappy, and he's going to introduce our topic and our guest.
Thanks, Rollo. Let's get right into it. Today we have a guest, Brave the World, who recently did a video on YouTube called Why Things Will Get Worse, and it was about the incidents that happened in Charlottesville over the last, was it two weekends ago or so? And we thought it was very interesting. She took a very nonviolent approach to it. And of course, whenever you take a nonviolent approach, you're going to be accused of things and articles will be written. And so we wanted to talk to her about that. So welcome to the show, Brave the World.
Thank you for having me. I feel special being present for your one-year anniversary.
So first, the title of your video is Why Things Will Get Worse. And without redoing the entire video right now, why will things get worse? And how do you think this started to begin with?
I break it down into a few points. The main one is free speech and the consequences of policing free speech. Because once you start labeling people as Nazis and preventing them from being able to freely speak on big social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook and even Patreon, and it doesn't even stop there, but specifically those platforms, once you prevent people from using those platforms because they are spouting hate speech, they become isolated. And let's take it with a grain of salt. Let's say a person is a Nazi and it isn't just a label and they are actually spouting legitimate hate speech, but they're not going as far as to call violence. What's going to happen if you censor that person? Well, you create a vacuum for them to fester in. They will only be able to talk to other like-minded people, and they will never be challenged, and they will never see any real reaction to their worldview. And throughout history, that's kind of how groups, these kinds of extremist groups happen. You know, they would meet at cafes or at someone's house or wherever, and they would just seek each other out, and their ideas would become bigger than themselves because they have this support system that's going unchallenged. Now, the nice thing about social media is that because there's so many people on there and it's so accessible, like Twitter, people describe it as a cocktail party that everyone's invited to. Anyone in the world can get in there and be like, you're wrong because A, B, and C. Instead, what they're doing is they're kicking people with extreme views off of Twitter so that they have nowhere to go but other like-minded people. That's just going to make them more extreme. It's very short-sighted and, frankly, a retarded thing to do.
Yeah, actually, one thing you mentioned in the video that I thought was fantastic was the woman from the Westboro Baptist Church. She was on the Joe Rogan podcast talking about her experience and how Twitter changed her world and opened up her mind, and she left that church. And if you're not familiar with Westboro Baptist Church, Google them. You've probably heard of them before. And she credits Twitter with that, with people being able to talk to her and challenge her on what she was saying. And had we banned her from Twitter, that never happens.
Yes. So, like, she's a human being. Nazis right. are human beings too. Socialists are human beings. And what's interesting, they all have something in common. There's a written doctrine that is reflective of their beliefs, and its interpretation is really, really vital. So in her case, it was the Bible. And you can interpret the Bible in many, many ways. There's very hyper-liberal interpretations. There's just pure historical, materialist interpretations. Anyways, the way that her church interprets scripture is, you know, pretty interesting. So I think what the breaking point for her was, and she said it herself, was like five people on Twitter that stuck with speaking to her in a non-aggressive and a non-accusatory way for like a year, and they would point out scripture and question her on her interpretation, and it was using rationality and logic. And you know what? Most people still have a brain. Like, it's really easy to assume about your enemy, like, oh, these Nazis, they're so dumb, or they're just full of hate, blah, blah, blah. You don't know. Like, you don't know that. You don't know them. They're still human beings. You don't know. And if you take the time to actually talk to them, maybe you can actually... I'm not going to claim that you can convince a person of a different view in one sitting, but if you reject them outright and claim they're subhuman, that is literally, first of all, in terms of a Nazi, that's mirroring their worldview, okay? And second of all, that is playing into their hand, because that's what they think of you anyways. They're full of hate for a reason, and you're reinforcing the reason that they're full of hate.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, how many minds do you think are changed by macing someone or hitting them with a bike lock or shouting in their face? That's not what convinced me to become an anarchist. It took a lot of discussion and a lot of time for these things to sink in, but calling me a statist never worked.
Yep.
Yeah, it's certainly difficult a lot of times. And I know that was one of the things I thought about too, is I need to do a better job of talking to people, especially on social media and Twitter. It's a cesspool of just feeling like you can kind of say anything to anyone. And if you're sitting across the table from someone, you wouldn't act the way that a lot of people do, including myself. Sometimes I'm not going to sit here and say I'm a saint on Twitter all the time. But it's important, and some people are difficult to deal with. The other day, there's a few of us actually trying to have a discussion with someone about economics and about the Federal Reserve or something, and he was just being really dismissive and insulting to us. And the best thing to do there is just to say, all right, well, you don't want to talk, so have a good one. And of course, and then generally speaking, with all these social media platforms, if someone's spewing out things, you know, like you said, actual Nazi stuff, you know, you could just not look at it instead of acting like it needs to be all shut down. So, and the other thing is, like Slappy said, he wasn't always an anarchist. I wasn't always an anarchist. I was a Republican for most of my life. So we always talk to each other and say, well, what we used to think this way. So what made us think differently? How do we get into that? And that's so much better than just, you know, shouting people down and just being dismissive and just flat out mean to them.
Well, what you touched on earlier, saying that I went like very anti-violence in the video, and let's get into that because I want to clarify my stance on being a pacifist. Or I am currently leaning towards, you know, Christian anarchism, and a lot of it has to do with non-aggression and pacifism, but. I still believe that the whole turn the other cheek, and I talk about this in the video, it's not about pacifism, it's about weaponizing kindness. And so, I mean, okay, look at what Christ did, right? He allowed himself to be crucified by the Pharisees and the Romans. And he forgave them during his torture and during the crucifixion, during his death. And Christianity became one of the biggest widespread religions in the history of the world. I think Christ won. Okay? I think Christ won. And that kind of attitude works. And you have to, so the turn the other cheek line, you have to read it in context with things like when Christ said, when you show kindness or when you love your enemy, it's like throwing coals into their eyes. So it's not that loving your enemy is a submission to your enemy. Mm-hmm. It's that it is actually a weapon against them. And I see it work all the time in little day-to-day scenarios. I had a friend like this in high school who, if someone was ever rude to her or did something mean, she would go up to them and apologize and be like, I'm so sorry, I've inconvenienced you. Is there something that we should discuss? And she didn't do it in a condescending way. She actually did it in a genuine way. And every single time I saw her do it, the person who was rude to her for like, it was always for no reason or something really petty. Mm-hmm. They were literally taken aback, flabbergasted, and shame filled their face.
Right. They don't know how to react. They're expecting a fight. It's so true. Yeah. And that line did hit with me when you mentioned that scripture passage, because I don't want to speak for Rollo, but I think we're in the same boat there going with Christian anarchism. And when you brought, I never heard it explained that way, that being nice to your enemy is like throwing coals in their eyes. That's that was powerful.
Yeah, it actually reminded me of a book by Clarence Darrow, Resist Not Evil, where he actually does take more of a pacifist approach to war and prison. And it actually, I'm not a pacifist, but I want to think a lot more about it. And he brought up kind of the same thing you're saying, is that if you have someone, you know, beating you down and you don't resist, people, the resistance kind of emboldens them. It makes them, it justifies their violence against you. So if you just kind of don't fight back, it's the human reaction to just feel like, wait, what's going on? They should be fighting back. And I think most human beings will stop. Now that's quite a risk when we're dealing with actual physical violence. So I'm not saying that.
I mean, it's a beautiful notion. It really is. And I think that would be a good way to go when you know that you're overpowered, when you know that acting violent against them will not save you anyways. Otherwise I can really understand why someone would want to, you know, use violence against violence. And I don't condone that. If someone aggresses against you, obviously, but we're speaking in terms of ideals here, and that is a beautiful ideal.
Right, and that is what Jesus had to do.
Yeah.
He had to die for...
Did you guys hear about that story? Rudolf Hess, one of the more famous Nazis, he's actually, like, I'm not trying to make his historical impact on the world a joke or anything, but like, he's a hilarious character. If you guys want to read up on Rudolf Hess, he's one of the more funny Nazis.
I read his book, like, Death Dealer, that he wrote.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So I know a little bit about him, but yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, you see, during the trials, the other Nazis around him are just like rubbing their brow in embarrassment, 'cause he went full crazy. He parachuted into England near the end of the war, right, to try and convince the British that like everything's gonna be fine. He was just like, put in a prison camp, obviously. Anyways, Rudolf Hess, his burial ground is somewhere in Germany, and these Nazis would come and pay their respects to him every year, and the townsfolk weren't really happy with that. And instead of being violent against these Nazis, they started to just mock them. And for every step the Nazis took, they would donate some money to like a pro-Jewish campaign. And they would like throw confetti at them and cheer. And then Nazis stopped showing up because it was counterproductive for the cause. And I thought that was pretty...
That's a like, really what cool a way story. To go.
Right. So like, these Antifa people, either they're just really short-sighted, which I am not buying. I think these Antifa people that show up to these rallies have just as much blood lost as some of the alt-right Nazi or even just right-leaning people, because these rallies are not coming from a vacuum. They're happening, and they're trying to, you know, they're covering their ass, they're doing the permits, they're marching. Mm-hmm. Why? Just like, you could just like, Antifa could just leave them alone. Instead, Antifa make sure that there's a riot. They make sure there's a riot. And you can make a very good argument that Antifa was the first to aggress, and then it's a free-for-all after that. And right. obviously the state had some, the state always likes to stir things up kind of surreptitiously. But anyways.
Well, yeah, apparently the police, when they shut down the rally, apparently the police, when they were dispersing the alt-right crowd, put them right into the Antifa crowd.
Yeah, I had someone that I know who was there as a journalist, and they said that's exactly what happened. They drove them into each other instead of keeping them separated.
Yeah, that's... Oh.
I mean, it's like World War II. Like, what's going to happen when you drive fascists into socialists? What do you think?
Surprise. But just to touch on another example of someone who, you know, fights people with kindness. I wish I'd had his name with me right now, but there's I see it on Twitter all the time getting passed around. There's a black man who's converted a lot of people out of the Ku Klux Klan, not by, you know, trying to convince them and arguing with them, but just by becoming friends with them.
That's super cool.
And through his friendship, they learn that, like, oh man, this guy's a human being.
Yeah.
Daryl Davis, maybe, or something like that. He was like a blues singer, maybe. I think I've seen that story. Yeah.
You have to this is the problem with the far alt. I don't even know what to call them anymore. The people who dip their toes in actual Nazi rhetoric, it comes back down to identity politics. And it's like, okay, dude, come on. Have you not met any Jewish people? Like, that's crazy to me.
Right.
I don't get it.
Yeah, it blows my mind when I see people saying stuff like that about anyone. It's, you know, have you ever never gone outside your house and experienced life?
Well, one thing you said in your video is the very last line, and I don't have the exact quote, but it was basically people can't find their own identity, so they want to be a part of something. Does that sound like what you said?
The line I've been saying, and I got to say it to Jordan Peterson like last week, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because it was brought up. He does these. He goes outside and he talks to the crowd, and someone brought it up. And basically, I like to say, people join ISIS because it's better than nothing. And I mean nothing in the literal sense of nothing, like a void in your soul, in your belief system, in your identity, in your heart, in your daily life. If you're a complete nihilist, you have zero purpose. Joining an extremist group overseas and almost like and risking your life for a cause is better than nothing. And it's not a stretch to say that this is the kind of mentality you see with Antifa members and Black Lives Matter members and the far right members and actual literal Nazis and whoever else, any group. Even like, dude, I would even go as far as to say Freedom Radio people, like Freedomain Radio, or how do you even call them? Freedomainers. But like people who go really deep in that identity as well. I mean, it's all the same thing. It's the same pathology.
Right. I agree. I mean, and just with ISIS, I mean, if you have your family, your neighborhood blown up, everything around you is just gone. And someone says, hey, you know, join this group and we'll fight back.
Yeah, but even I get that. Like, I get people in Afghanistan and Iran and Iraq joining ISIS. Like, I get it. Like, their babies were blown up. Okay, I don't condone it, but I get it. But right. Westerners, 15-year-old girls in Ireland. Excuse me, something deeper is going on.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I think I guess the extreme nature of what happens in Afghanistan and Iraq and those places shows with how they respond compared to what's happening in the Western world, where it's more like perceived problems and there are not to say that some groups have see problems that don't exist. I mean, there's all sorts of problems. Just, I don't agree with the alt-right on a lot of things, but some of the problems I see are true.
Well, yeah, let's touch on. So I had some comments in my video like, oh yeah, love the enemy. Let's just let all the people raping little girls into England from the Middle East and Africa. Like, okay, like the refugee, you know, trope. But they missed the nuance of the argument. So it's actually the same problem, but in reverse. So what the West did, especially Europe and left-leaning socialist governments with left-leaning socialist backers, they do not see any immigrants or migrants as their enemy. They see them as their neighbor. They literally perceive no threat. At least the general population doesn't. And then when problems arise, when you do bring people in, you know, indiscriminately, it's like such a shock that you have to deny that it's happening now. So it doesn't, like, the argument doesn't work because it's not thy enemy, it's thy neighbor in their mind. And that's what matters, is the perception. So if they perceived people who are immigrating to their country as thy enemy, which people of other cultures inevitably are, even like in a biblical interpretation, people from a couple miles away are your enemy because it's a different tribe, it's a different mm-hmm. city, it's a different culture. That doesn't mean you should outright reject them and kill them or something. You can still welcome thy enemy into your home. You can still welcome thy enemy and receive them with kindness. But if you perceive them as thy enemy, you will take precautions and you will make sure that you're not blinded by ignorance. You will make sure that thy enemy is brought into your country in a reasonable, in a delegated, and in a common sense way. Instead, they perceive them as thy neighbor, as though like your grandma's coming over, no big deal. That hasn't been working out. So I'm sticking to my guns and saying, love thy enemy. And that's the virtue. Because when you love the enemy, you're actually doing something good and you're doing it in an intelligent way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and just, you know, to continue on your point a little bit, is that it doesn't help that those governments are stripping the people of any ability to defend themselves. So it's all it's
well, even, yeah, and like on a metaphysical, like, huge, like, not in just a physical way where they don't have guns, on a free speech and everyday consequence of how they police people. So they can't even defend themselves with their tongue by telling people about what happened or by going to the police, because this is a protected class. And it's mm-hmm. not specific to refugees. In England, it's been happening with anyone who's considered low socioeconomic class. Like, you can have a crime committed, and because they're considered a minority, and it's not actually relative to race, it's relative to class, like how much income you make. So it's like a socialist agenda. You can get away with anything if you're lower class, because like the police just want, they have this rhetoric where they don't want to discriminate against disprivileged people.
Yeah. And I think that ties back into what we were saying earlier, is if you shut those people's ability down to talk and express those ideas, even if you disagree with them, even if they're wrong, they're not going to say it publicly. They're not going to say it around people, and they're just going to be in their small groups, and it's just going to fester and fester and fester without any sort of checking from someone who might disagree with them, right or wrong, right, wrong, or indifferent. So you just get absorbed in that world.
Yeah, and not to mention, we're already in our circles. Like, the people, it's never changed. The biggest socialists and critics of capitalism are rich, white, privileged people who say things to this day like, oh, the only time I've ever been sexually harassed is by white men. I'm like, yeah, because you've never even, like, touched a black person. Like, you live in a gated community. Like, are you kidding me? And it's like, I mean, it's funny, but like, it's not, because they live such sheltered lives. Like, yeah, if you're exposed to 99% Asian and whites, you're not really going to be harassed by people of color because they don't live in your neighborhoods.
Exactly. Yeah. It's always the, who said it sometime? I think it was Jim Babb said it to me. It's like the Democrats and the socialists, that they love black people and they love minorities like they love their cattle.
Yeah,
They don't want anything wrong with racist, anything bad to happen to them, but they don't want the gate opening to the communities and the cattle, you know, walking in.
Yeah,
that's going to ruin everything for them.
And Thomas Sowell got this, and Malcolm X got this. Like, he got it that the Democratic New Yorkers were way more racist than the Southerners, because they like paid lip service to the blacks, but once they moved in their communities in New York, they were like repulsed and didn't want them there. Mm-hmm. But in the South, they all coexisted, and yeah, there were some tension, but they still coexisted.
Right.
So going back a little bit to just about kind of the Western drive to these far right, or again, I don't even know how to correctly identify the extremist alt-right and the Antifa. It's, and as you mentioned, even in things like the free domain type things and other more libertarian circles too, that people get so wrapped up in this political thing that I'm a thin libertarian. So how the culture happens is kind of outside the libertarian, not philosophy, but I think the market handles that, to put the long story short. So I have other things that direct how I live my life, you know, how to live the good life. And, you know, we're touching on it before about, you know, Christianity. I'm a Catholic. So that has a big part in my life with what makes me happy. So, you know, why do I live my life? Obviously, the libertarian thing and doing this podcast and having this website is a big part of my life. But there's more things, there's more to it, because it would kind of seem nihilistic if I didn't have religion.
Have you found that your church is being affected by the politics? Because I find that in terms of Protestants, at least, people's politics are put before their God. And I've been to a few churches, Protestant churches, and it's white privilege this, reparations that, and feeling guilty this, colonialism that.
Not that explicitly. And probably not nearly as bad as, because I've never heard anything like that sitting in a church. There was actually, I moved out to where I am about 2 years ago, and there's a church closest to me that I was going to, and it was right after the Charlie Hebdo shooting. And during the homily, the priest said something like, this is a fight, a war against Christianity. And he just didn't, I didn't like the way he really described what was going on. It didn't seem like he had a very good grasp. So after Mass, I went up to him and said, hey, I just wanted to talk to you about what you're saying about, you know, terrorism and radical Islam. And, you know, I think there's bigger problems that we're dealing with. And kind of went into my little explanation. He just said, oh, it seems like you're a student of politics. Keep going with that. It was just kind of a slap in the face, it felt like. So I went to another church since then. I haven't gone back to that one.
Yeah, you got to like your priest.
Yes. And there was one, you know, the homily this week, they talked about what happened in Charlottesville a little bit. And it was an attack against Nazism. And yeah, I didn't really disagree with what he was saying. Would I have liked for him to say, hey, it's not just the idiots on the right, there's idiots on both sides. But, you know.
I went to a youth group with my church, and they were pretty good about it. They were just talking about it as a whole, and we prayed on it. And can I swear?
Sure.
Can I tell you, like, this is super fucked up. I haven't said this publicly, but. So it came to me, and it was my turn to pray. And like, I know people's names. So I prayed for people by name, because it just makes it more real. Like, I don't want to pray for, like, oh, I hope that group that happened to be there is okay. Like, it was way more real to me, because I know people who were there on both, well, not on both sides, but following the news, I also knew, not personally, but I had an idea. I could like think, I had like a manifestation in my mind of the person. It wasn't it wasn't so airy-fairy to me. So I prayed for the woman's family that died, and I prayed for Baked Alaska, who got like acid thrown in his face and might go blind.
Right.
And I thought I would feel a great relief, but instead I feel like I felt their hatred. I didn't feel hatred for them, or I didn't feel hatred because of them. It felt like God literally filled me with the hatred that they felt. and it was, I got hot, you know, like, I hunt, like, after you kill an animal, like, you feel hot, like, your veins are, like, expanding. It was, I don't know what to make of it
still. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's, because I've kind of, there was, how many years ago was it? About 7 years ago. Actually, the anniversary just happened. My, I haven't talked about this really much either, but my sister was getting blood work done. She had to go into school for nursing, and she brought her best friend with her to just go to the hospital because they're going down the shore after that. And a girl who had been huffing lost control, passed out, lost control of the car, jumped the curb and hit them. My sister survived miraculously. She broke every bone in her body, but her friend was killed. And it was a very weird, I didn't hate the girl, but I didn't forgive her, and I couldn't, you know, find a way to forgive her. It was actually the book I mentioned earlier, Resist Not Evil, that actually changed my mind on it. But that feeling that you said, that hot feeling, sitting in the courtroom when the sentencing was happening, I don't think I blinked 1 minute. Or not one blink during the whole thing. And it was just that. Yeah, it was just, it felt evil.
Manslaughter or?
Yeah, it was, I forget exactly what it was. It was, I think she got like 5 years in prison plus a lot of like house. Yeah, she'll be in the system for a long time. I think she was just an idiot girl that made an idiot decision.
Very costly one.
Yeah, absolutely. Not to downplay her, obviously. But yeah, just that feeling of evil was horrible. And I remember sitting there being like, I don't wish this upon my worst enemy, how I feel right now. And then it still took me a long time. And after reading the book, I finally was like, said it, not even out loud, but in my mind, said, I forgive you. And it really did have lift a lot of weight off me. So I guess for me saying that story is it takes time for this stuff.
And yeah.
It's extremely difficult. And I wasn't even part of the family whose, you know, daughter was killed. You know, she was what, 19 years old or something?
Yeah, 19, I think.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, so it's hard stuff. I mean, there's and just knowing other people, seeing things on the news, it really makes you feel like there's, you know, people got a lot on their plates. So it's, I don't even know where I'm taking this at this point.
Well, I love the Christian idea of forgiveness, and it's that it's for yourself. Like, it's not, because it's not like, it's not your job to forgive your enemy or to forgive a person that wronged you. That's God's job, right? It's God's it's God's job to judge them. Your forgiveness of them doesn't change them or anything for their life. It changes things for your life because you don't have hatred that you carry on your back. And that, it took me a really long time to understand that. And it is really hard to do. And I don't know. I haven't been faced with something as intense as that, but I hope that when I am, I can find the strength to forgive. And I just wonder how, like, that guy who drove that car into the crowd, like, this is what I, fuck Chris Cantwell, like, what's he doing running his mouth and saying that was justified? And, like, yeah, I get that the guy was being attacked in the car, but that was, he was alone, that was his fault. And you can slowly back out. Like, you don't have to slam the brakes into a crowd of people that weren't attacking you.
Right.
Like, yeah, are you kidding me? Like, Chris, I know Chris is a messed up dude, and I have friends who have, like, serious, serious beef with him. He is hated, but I just can't. I'm sorry, I don't hate the guy. I don't know the guy. I know that he is very severely messed up emotionally. I know he used to be an alcoholic, but, like, he broke down. He thought he was going to get shot after that, and he's still a human being, and it's really hard for me to hate him. He just needs to. Dude needs to sit down and think about things, you know? Right. He's not helping.
Yeah, I saw that video of him crying And
yeah, people are like making fun of them. I'm like, yeah, I would fucking cry too if I thought the cops were gonna go through my door and shoot me. Like, what?
Right.
You guys, you think it's funny? You think it's funny? Like these videos. Oh, what were the titles? Sniveling Nazi, scared and crying. Like, that's God again. Like, this goes back to my point. Like, you think you look good making fun of him? Like, this is when he needs kindness. Imagine if you showed him kindness. Imagine if an Antifa person showed him kindness in his moment of weakness and fear. You think maybe that would change his mind? I think it would.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're expecting, I mean, it's so disarming to expect one thing and be, you know, hit with something else.
Yeah.
The kindness. And it's
the
just
shock of it helps people out of their hatred.
Yeah. Cause I was watching the responses, and before I watched it, I was thinking, yeah, this is going to, you know, and I fell into it. I thought, oh, this is going to be great to see this, cause I don't like him either. It's going to be great to see him crying. I watched it and I thought, oh, this is terrible. I did feel bad for him. And I wrote an article, was writing an article about it, not slamming him, but it was kind of like I don't even know what the point of it was, but I ended up deleting it because I didn't know a good way to write it without, you know, having something come out that I didn't want to seem like, I don't know. It's just, I figured, you know what? It's just not even worth it. But it's, yeah, he's the perfect example. It's no. Easy to be kind to people that you get along with, or someone that, you know, I agree with 90% of this person on this kind of stuff. So the 10% is easy. When it's someone like Cantwell who goes out and says something really terrible about what had just happened, and then that's really where the test is.
Right. So one more question for you. I know you've been generous with your time, so we'll let you get going. But the title of your video is Why Things Will Get Worse, which I agree. I don't see this getting better just from talking to average people. Everyone's taking a side and saying how great it is to hate Nazis. And that's like saying you hate murder. Like, and nobody likes Nazis. So how do we change it? So what do we do going forward? You talk about having conversations. Do you see that possibly happening? Would it be possible to get an Antifa person to sit down with a KKK person, or even an alt-right and a Black Lives Matter? Do you think that's even in the discussion or possible?
The problem is the people who seek to do this stuff, they want to fight. Like, it's all about headlines. You look at these journalists, ugh, and all they want is that awful headline that'll reel people in.
Yeah.
And they're exacerbating all the effects of the things that are happening, but they're exacerbating it tenfold because of their fucking headlines. Honestly, if any, probably no journalists are listening, but they are to blame. I blame them for a lot of the deaths and the violence that is going on, because they're just like prodding the fucking bear with rabies. It disgusts me. This is why people are like, oh, how do I introduce you? Are you a journalist? I'm like, no, fuck no. I'm not a journalist. I never will be. Those people are disgusting, right? Bottom feeding leeches. I hate 99% of them. And I know that goes against what I've been saying, but they are Satan's army, to be honest, because Satan is the great deceiver, and that's all that journalists do these days. So until that changes, until there's some sort of, and I think it is happening, I think people are generally distrustful of headlines and the things they see in the media now. But at the same time, when you see something that confirms your bias, you're like feeling over it.
It's almost like a subconsciously seeking into your head as you browse websites and see headlines, you know?
And I had this conversation on Twitter, like, oh, well, you don't know what the article actually says. I'm like, it doesn't matter what it says, because the title says it all. And even if the title is everyone who's right-wing is a Nazi, poll shows, and then the actual article is like, just kidding, it doesn't matter, because nobody reads the article. The headlines are what dictates public opinion. Especially from big places like the New York Times, etc. Like, people see that and they have this reaffirming check mark in their head that, yeah, this is a big publication name, it must be true, and they don't bother reading the rest because who has time anymore? So until all of these things collapse, until all of these big publications just collapse under their lies, I don't know how it's going to get better, because it's really not. It's really not. And I didn't even talk about that in the video, but maybe that's its own thing.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, it is. And everyone reads headlines. I do it myself. But how many, and there's some stuff where I've seen the headlines like, wait, that doesn't make sense. And you read it. And that's 99% of the time. It's just a, you know, clickbait.
It's the point of the headline.
Even if it, you know, it's not even intended to be calling it clickbait's wrong, because they don't even necessarily want you to read the article. They just want you to get riled up over what the title says. So yeah, it's a mess. It's disgusting. I also don't understand how these people go to bed and sleep at night.
No, it's not about hating Nazis. It's about having a unified progressive perspective on the globalist world that we live in. That's it. And I'm sorry, I don't think that's going to be working out in long term, but there's going to be a lot of blood spilled.
I think you're right, sadly.
Yeah, there's a lot of just, you know, the confirmation biases, and people just like to throw out that every person that is a leftist or Democrat or progressive, oh, they all agree with Antifa, and anyone who's a Republican or conservative or right, well, they're all Nazis, and it just gets this vicious spiral, death circle. But
as we live our everyday lives, we walk past them in stores and we get along just fine.
Yeah, that's the funny thing about it.
Yeah, it's, you know, people are just asking the wrong questions. Like, oh, I can't believe there's Nazis in the 21st century. It's like, no, they didn't come out of a vacuum. Like, the question is, why are there actual nationalist socialists in the 21st century? Why? How did it happen? Because Hitler didn't fucking come out of a vacuum either.
Right.
Okay? That's the question we need to be asking. We need to be taking some responsibility for the result for once.
Absolutely. So with that, or did I hear
no,
you?
No, that's good. Let's.
Yeah, that was good.
Go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for joining us today. Can you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, bravetheworld.com, or search Brave the World at YouTube, Twitter at Brave the World. I'm pretty consistent.
Pretty good, and it's great stuff. Yeah, check out all our videos. They're all very good, very thought-provoking. You'll enjoy them.
Yeah, it's a lot of your stuff has made me think twice about things that I took for granted. So just don't produce anything about how tractors are terrible or something. Sorry, that's
inside.
Yeah, it's an inside joke. I have to mention a tractor every episode. I literally just remembered to do it right now. So
that's cute.
A little bit.
All right, guys. Good night. Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
All right, so do we have a free market story for this week?
Yeah, I think you had one you were talking about.
Oh, that's right. I have one this week. Yeah, so a couple of weeks ago, I was at a car show. Brought my kids there, checking out all these cool-looking cars. And, of course, there's sponsors there. It was free admission. It was great. It was probably about 400 cars. It was a fundraiser. There was a lot of businesses who sponsored it and set up tents, giving away stuff, selling things. And one of the tents I had walked by was a home remodeling tent. There was a young guy there, a sales guy, talking to me. I told him, you know, right now it's not in the budget. We're not going to do anything with the house. Yeah, I appreciate it. I don't need anything. He's like, yeah, just get a free quote. There's got to be something you need done with your house. Like, yeah, it certainly is. I need new gutters. I know I need new gutters. I'm just not going to do it now. I told him, don't waste your time. It's not going to happen right now. So, well, just let me get your information. We'll give you a free quote. So, you know, I kind of rolled my eyes a bit. All right, I guess you have a quota for names you have to get for the quote. I will give you my name and I can get a free quote on new gutters. So, and after I did it, I was kind of thinking like, all right, well, the guy will come and give me a quote. If I have to, he's going to give me a hard sales pitch. He's going to be calling me once a week, you know, none of that happened though. He did come to my house. He called in advance to see if we were home, which we were. He came, he took a look around the house, measured some things, gave us a quote, was very polite. He had kids. We have kids. Talked about that a little bit. I told him we're not going to buy anything right now. He said, no problem. Here's my card if you ever need it. It was very efficient, very friendly, gave me the quote and left. And I'm not going to get my gutters replaced now, but I will, because they need to be replaced. And that's who I'm going to call. It was a free service. I told him I'm not going to buy anything in advance. I told him when he was there, I was not going to buy anything. He was probably tired of me saying it, but he wants to earn my business. He was very polite. It was very pain-free. He came and gave me the number, and that was a lot of goodwill. And so if my neighbors start talking about needing gutters, I'm going to give them his name. And I am going to use him when I have to get my gutters done, because the price was really good. It was much lower than I had expected. So what does that have to do with the market? Well, he's trying to earn some business. He provided a service for free. I wasn't going to go out and shop around for the quotes. He came to me. I mean, it was at the car show, so I was there, but he was out there looking for business and provided that for free. It was his time. He came and did it. There was no service fee, nothing to come out, and no pressure. He hasn't called since. He hasn't emailed me. I'm not on his list. Or if I am, he hasn't sent me anything to fill up my inbox. And so what I was talking to Rollo about before the show was, gutters are not, at least here, not mandated by law that have to be up to code, at least not that I know of. There's no inspectors who come around and do it. I knew I needed to get them. We had someone who was willing to provide it, who was eager to provide it, to the point they came to my house to give me a free quote when I told them I'm not going to buy anything. Would that happen if you were required to replace your gutters every X number of years? Probably not. Prices, if they were regulated, wouldn't matter to shop around. You wouldn't have to provide those extra services to separate yourself from competition, because you're forced to buy it. So you're going to go where you have to go, and the price is going to be the same because it's regulated. So that's my free market story.
So this guy's going to show up with a gun. Right, and force you to buy his gutters, right?
If I refuse to pay him the fee for coming out, yes.
Probably.
Probably. Like if you refuse to pay the fee for the... No, that was the other thing. I didn't really want him to come, to be honest with you, but I did agree to it. I did give him my address, and he came and still didn't charge me. It's kind of like some other organizations may force you to use something against your will and then force you to pay for it. And if you don't, they kill you.
I don't know what you're referring to. So we'll just see the show notes page for this episode is mcflugel.com/53. You'll find links to subscribe to our email list, as well as subscribing to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, as well as links to our Facebook page and Twitter accounts. And we'll also link to the Brave the World stuff. She produces awesome content, and make sure to check her out. Anything else, Slappy?
I think that's good. I think that's a pretty good episode.
Yeah, it's a good episode for the 1 year anniversary. So again, thanks for all the listeners who have been with us for a year, and thank you for any new listeners. We hope to do this for many, many years, and we hope that you and your friends and everyone you know will join us on that. So
in order to do that, you got to share us and yes. Like us. So thank you all, and have a good night. Peace.
Until next week.